I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Sexual harassment is what we talk about this hour of the program. Of course, the conversation thought of because of what's going on with Fox News and Bill O'Reilly. You've heard the reports this week, the big story in the New York Times on Sunday. About $13 million has been paid out over the years to address complaints from women about Mr. O'Reilly's behavior. He denies that the claims have merit. He has been a huge asset at Fox News for a number of years. He's been there about 20 years. He has the number one program in cable news. The station has pulled in billions of dollars in revenue for the parent company, 21st Century Fox. Yet, as a result of the news that five women received payouts from either O'Reilly or the company in exchange for agreeing to not pursue litigation or speak about their accusations against him and the agreements, some came from Mr. O'Reilly, some came from the parent company. Some of the settlements came after Roger Ailes was dismissed last summer in the wake of sexual harassment accusations there. So the whole culture at Fox has been questioned, and it would appear that Mr. O'Reilly might be in trouble, or maybe he's not in trouble, but 52 advertisers is quite a lot, although some reports are they're not pulling all their money from Fox, they're just redistributing advertising money to other shows. Nonetheless, it's the kind of publicity that I'm sure he doesn't welcome, and we're going to be talking about how widespread sexual harassment is in companies around the country. What happens if you find yourself a victim of sexual harassment? Legally, what is it you can do? Are there companies that have kind of a culture of sexual harassment, or is Fox unusual in this regard? And we also have to throw in the president's comments yesterday, because he, of course, has made comments about his own sexual assault. Speaking in the Oval Office, the president yesterday praised Mr. O'Reilly as a good person, saying, "I don't think Bill did anything wrong." And he went on to say, "Personally, I think he shouldn't have settled, because you should have taken it all the way. I don't think Bill did anything wrong. I think he's a person I know well. He is a good person." So a lot of people have been talking about this story, and I'd like for our guests to comment on the O'Reilly situation, and then, of course, we'll look at sexual harassment in the workplace this hour. Our guest is Emily Martin, General Counsel and Vice President for Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. She oversees the center's advocacy, policy, and education efforts to ensure fair treatment and equal opportunity for women at work and to achieve the workplace standards that allow all women to achieve and succeed, with a particular focus on the obstacles that confront women in low-wage jobs and women of color. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Obviously, the news peg is Fox News. What do you make of this O'Reilly situation? Do you think that the network should fire him because of what you've heard so far? What do you think of his response? What do you think of the president's response? What do you think of the apparent culture that exists at Fox? Have you had issues of sexual harassment on the job where you've been during your career? What action have you taken or not taken? Why not? Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Emily, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Yeah, very nice to have you with us. I'd like to hear your comments, because we're talking about this issue in part because of the O'Reilly situation at Fox. What do you make of that situation?
Well, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that there really seems to be a cultural problem at Fox News. You know, one of the things that we know about sexual harassment is that the leadership of an organization, of a company, can make a big difference in sort of setting the tone for the organization about what kinds of behaviors are acceptable, what is excusable, and what really isn't. And from all the allegations coming out of Fox News, both in regard to Roger Ailes and in regard to O'Reilly, it really sounds like that there was a very toxic culture, or is a very toxic culture at Fox News, which basically allows men in power to get away with really unacceptable forms of behavior towards women in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Does it send, I don't know what the network's going to do. It seems as though advertising talks big. And if you have 52, as of yesterday, advertisers saying they want off his show, I don't know if that affects it or not. But it has to say something, doesn't it, to the network?
I would hope that the network is paying attention to this public backlash. I mean, that's why advertisers are feeling the need to speak up, is because when women hear these stories, they're disgusted. And because lots of consumers, women and men, don't want to consume a product which is associated with sexual exploitation and sexual harassment. So, you know, this summer we saw that public pressure can have an impact when Roger Ailes was forced from his leadership of Fox News. Now, he left with a big golden parachute, but it certainly is the case that Fox felt compelled to respond to a wave of disgust across the country that this could still be happening in this day and age.
Well, and yet you wonder how broad the disgust is, because you have the president of the United States yesterday praising Mr. O'Reilly as a good person. I don't think Bill did anything wrong. I think he shouldn't have settled, he said. And, of course, we remember the Access Hollywood tape last summer. Or maybe we don't remember it. I don't quite understand this fully. So each of these people has been accused of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior, and the president, by his own words, has talked about his assault kind of behavior. I mean, it's kind of, does that mean that we just don't care very much about this anymore, or what? What's going on?
Well, I agree that the president's comments on the allegations against Bill O'Reilly were incredibly disturbing in the message that they send to victims of harassment and to harassers around the country, especially coming as they do in the wake of the Access Hollywood comments and the many, many allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault against President Trump himself. So obviously we are not hearing the concern about harassment from all the places that it would be really nice to hear concern. It would be helpful if our national leaders spoke in a clear voice that this behavior is unacceptable. That being said, we also have seen both this week in response to the O'Reilly allegations and in the past weeks and months, a tremendous surge of activism by women in particular around the country. We've seen it in the Women's March. We've seen it in the tweets that the Women's March organizers have been leading, saying drop O'Reilly, where women are sharing their own stories of sexual harassment. We've seen many, many individuals who feel really personally as though they've got to speak up at this moment and share their story and fight back against a culture that is abusive and exploitive toward women. And that activism is a source of optimism.
Mm-hmm. So what is the role of a company to take responsibility? Legally, what's the role? 21st Century Fox owns Fox. So do they ultimately have to take responsibility? Do they have a whole list of rules as to what constitutes sexual harassment? Do they need to reprimand O'Reilly or send him to sensitivity training or get him off the air? Or what happens here?
Yeah, so under law, the company, the employer, is responsible for some sorts of harassment by a supervisor just automatically. So if a supervisor fires somebody because she won't sleep with them, that's the company's problem. The company has legal liability for sexual harassment in that situation. If it's instead what we call a hostile work environment, where there's just comments every day, there's statements, there's maybe touching, there's just real sex-based hostility at work, whether in the form of sexual overtures or whether in the form of gender-specific derogatory comments, then the employer is on the hook for that supervisor's actions, unless it has provided some way for employees to make complaints of sexual harassment, and the employee has, for some unreasonable reason, failed to do it, has failed to say to the employer, hey, there's a problem here. So in many, many instances, when a supervisor is harassing his supervisees, the company is on the hook. And even when it's not a supervisor relationship, if it's a coworker relationship, the company is on the hook if it knew or should have known about the harassment and didn't do anything to stop it. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of reasons why employers have a legal obligation and a financial interest in addressing any sorts of harassment allegations really promptly and effectively.
Mm-hmm. O'Reilly has made comments about nobody has called this anonymous hotline to report any kind of behavior or bad behavior on my part. There haven't been any calls, I guess, yesterday. Now, there was one call by somebody who has accused him of sexual harassment. Is this something that companies need to establish, that there has to be an anonymous hotline? And what do you make of the fact that at Fox, evidently people didn't make use of that hotline?
Well, companies definitely should provide a variety of different avenues where victims of harassment can complain. So, for example, it's not all going to one supervisor in human resources when it's possible that supervisor is really good friends with the person who's accused of harassment.
Right.
There should be a lot of different ways in which you can make a complaint of harassment. That being said, it is definitely the case that many, many people who experience even severe harassment at work don't make a complaint. And that is usually because they have often a very reasonable fear of retaliation if they do so. They may think to themselves, I have more to risk in complaining about this than I do in just enduring it. While it is illegal for a company to retaliate against somebody because she has complained of harassment, it definitely does happen. And it can be a very reasonable thing, especially if you're talking about someone who is really important and holds a lot of power in your workplace, like, for example, Bill O'Reilly at Fox News, to conclude that I have more to lose than to gain from going forward with a complaint of discrimination or harassment here.
Mm-hmm. And what's your take, would you say, Emily, as to how widespread this issue is in the workplace? Is it still a significant problem?
Unfortunately, it's still a very significant problem. So different surveys have tried to figure out exactly how common sexual harassment is, and they've come up with different numbers, but at the low end, it's something like 1 in 4 working women have experienced harassment on the job. And when you ask the question in other ways, it can go up to 60, 70, even 80%
Whoa.
Of women who report having experienced some sort of harassing behavior at work. So, you know, there are degrees of harassment. Some of this is really severe. Some of it is less severe. But unfortunately, it continues to be a significant issue in the workplace today.
Yeah. And are there cases, both O'Reilly and actually the president and others have talked about the fact that, well, there are a lot of gold diggers out there. I'm a public person. I'm very prominent. And there are people who are out to get me unfairly just because they can get some money out of it.
Yeah, so it is not as though making a complaint of harassment is a golden ticket and you don't have to worry about your financial problems anymore because you're done. Under federal law, there are actually pretty severe caps on any sort of damages that you can get if you go to court. You're not going to get rich off a harassment claim, and that's assuming that you go to, that you find an attorney, that you go to court, that you make it through the whole process and you win. There are a lot of obstacles to bringing a claim, especially if you don't make a ton of money or even if you're a middle-class person. You know, legal representation is expensive. If you work in a low-wage job, it may be completely out of reach. And again, there are lots of reasons beyond the financial obstacles to litigating a claim why women and men who experience harassment may find it to be more risky than helpful to go forward with a claim. You know, there are real drawbacks to being known as somebody who sues your employer, especially if you work in an industry where the players know each other. People who are deciding how to deal with harassment that they're experiencing at work often have to weigh whether they're going to be harming their future career prospects in some way if they proceed with a claim of discrimination or harassment. And those are really quite significant concerns.
Well, we're going to welcome phone calls, and here is how you reach our conversation. Our guest this hour is Emily Martin. Emily is General Counsel and Vice President for Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. She oversees the center's advocacy, policy, education efforts to ensure fair treatment and equal opportunity for women at work. And we are talking about sexual harassment on the job, our conversation prompted by the stories about Bill O'Reilly this week, and the fact that he has settled to the tune of $13 million with five women who've received payouts either from him or from 21st Century Fox in exchange for agreeing not to pursue litigation or speak about their accusations against him. That's a whole lot of money. There are a whole lot of sponsors of the Bill O'Reilly Show now who have pulled out of sponsoring his program, saying they don't want to be associated with him and with this kind of accusation or his behavior. And so it's a big mess at Fox News, but it's been a big mess for some time because Roger Ailes was also forced out because of similar charges against him and similar payouts, too, huge amounts of money to women. So what do you make of this? Do you think this is widespread all over the country? What do you think of the president standing up for Bill O'Reilly and his comments yesterday? And do you forget about what the president has said about in his Access Hollywood tape, or is that still fresh of mind? Because the president said what he said and has acted the way that he has acted and stood up for Bill O'Reilly, does this make this less of an issue in this country because very top people are associated with this? What should we do about it? Should Bill O'Reilly be fired? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And we'll be with you in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Emily Martin, our guest. Sexual harassment is what we're talking about this hour. Phone lines are humming. Our number, keep it in mind because they're busy right now, 800-486-8655. Erin is calling from DeForest. Hi, Erin.
Hi there.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I'm calling in. You got my attention because you were wondering if people had experiences in certain industries with sexual harassment and a culture of, you know, turning people's heads. And I just wanted to speak to academia, and
sure,
particularly STEM.
Okay.
Women in STEM, I feel like, deal with a lot of sexual harassment.
And how so? Has something happened in your experience or others you know?
Yes, actually, both. I went through graduate school, which, as you probably know, is kind of a trial-by-fire experience. And my advisor was a sexual harasser. And as I was going through graduate school, he was having a relationship with another woman in my lab. And so in my experience, there was kind of this fear of saying anything because, you know, my advisor holds my career in his hands.
Yes.
You know, it's a privilege for me to be in his lab, right?
Right.
And then even afterwards, after graduating, I never said anything.
Did you think about saying something, Erin? Did you weigh that possibility?
You know, I did, but I think it's kind of like Stockholm Syndrome, where, you know, I was kind of a prisoner in this environment of sexual harassment, but then my advisor did me a favor, you know, he let me graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm.
You know, he started my career.
Mm-hmm.
I should be grateful to him. I'd ruin his career if I said anything. So I think there's a lot of that in academia, and I know of many others that have had the same experience.
I'll bet there are a lot of people in similar situations. Emily.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of really important things in what Aaron just said. First, it is the case that in occupations in fields where there aren't a lot of women, where it's traditionally been male-dominated, there are generally higher risks of harassment. Women are seen as interlopers in some way, and harassment is one of the ways that men in those fields sort of send the message that you don't belong here, and I'm in charge, and maybe you should get out. So it's not shocking to hear that story about working in a lab and experiencing harassment. And the other piece I think is really important is how very hard it is to make a complaint, even when the harassment you're experiencing is absolutely real and serious. These are often people who have a great deal of control over your career, over your livelihood, over the opportunities you're going to have in your job and in the next job. And so there are often very good reasons why people don't feel able to come forward.
Would it have made sense, or I would imagine this can be a big expense as well, what if you get an attorney? When do you get an attorney? Should you get an attorney?
You know, I think that talking to an attorney is always, having information is always good. And an attorney can tell you what will likely happen and what will likely not happen if you bring a charge. If you have an attorney and decide to make a complaint or bring a legal charge of discrimination, your attorney can help intervene if anything occurs at your job that seems retaliatory. But it is a real thing that it can be difficult to find legal help. Another thing that can be useful is talking to other women in the workplace. Now, sometimes other women won't have experienced this harassment, but often a harasser is sort of an equal opportunity harasser. But a lot of different women are experiencing this sort of treatment, and there is power in numbers. It both helps the victim of harassment understand that this is not my fault, this is not some misunderstanding that I created, that this is a bigger problem that requires a bigger solution. And it also, if a number of women get together to go to the company to say, there's a problem here, you need to address it, it both makes it more likely that the company will take it seriously, and it makes it less likely that any individual is going to experience retaliation because, again, there's right. Some safety in numbers.
Yeah. And you mentioned women. We traditionally think of women as being the victims of sexual harassment. Are men as well?
Absolutely. I mentioned women, and women are the majority of victims of sexual harassment, but men can be and are victims of sexual harassment. It's also the case that not only can women harass men and men harass women, but there can be same-sex sexual harassment, either because, you know, people are sexually attracted to people of the same sex, or because sexual harassment doesn't have to be based on sexual attraction. It can be based on hostility that is expressed in gendered terms. So, for example, in the case where the Supreme Court acknowledged that sexual harassment can happen even if the victim and the harasser are the same sex, it was a case where a man worked on an oil rig and his coworkers thought he was too feminine and gave him a hard time, to say the least. They threatened to rape him. It was grotesque and extensive sexual harassment, and the Supreme Court says, yes, the fact that it's men harassing men doesn't mean that that's somehow legal and okay.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Aaron, for your call. Tony in Green Bay is next. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm responding to the fact that Donald Trump is defending Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a retired psychotherapist, and I have seen the kind of behavior both of these men exhibit for 30, 35 years. And I have also seen women being confined by the fact that they will be blamed for reporting it. And this seems to be something that maybe is somewhat less, but it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
I was stunned that Trump defended O'Reilly just off the cuff with knowing nothing about what was going on.
It is a kind of issue that you would think he would just say nothing about, no comment on this because of his past, right?
Well, not only because of his past, but also because he knew no facts.
Right.
But then again, this is the man who's in the White House.
So what do we do about this, Tony? As a society, we've known about this issue for a long time, and we haven't changed a lot of behavior, it would appear. So what do we do about it?
We have to start believing women the way we've learned to believe children.
Oh. And,
because at least a lot of children are no longer being abused. And I think the same thing is true for women. These things need to be investigated. There need to be networks in order to do this instead of just blowing it off.
Mm-hmm. Emily, what do you think?
So I think that's right. I think that continuing to strengthen legal protections against harassment and make sure that harassment laws are fully enforced is also an important piece. One of the things that came out of a harassment task force that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission led last year was a report that, among several other recommendations, suggested that it might be useful for employers and others to have more focus on bystander intervention, to acknowledge that often harassment occurs in front of other people in the workplace, and to help give people who witness harassment the tools to speak up, including men witnessing harassment of women, to say, that's not acceptable, that's not okay. I think that obviously there's still a lot of work to be done, but it's also important to acknowledge that we have come a long way in our culture and that progress is possible. So, it was not so very many years ago that the term sexual harassment wasn't even understood as a legal issue, a legal problem, and something that should be unacceptable at work rather than just a problem you might have with your boss because sometimes there's interpersonal issues at work. It was only in the 70s, the early 80s, when when the Supreme Court and other legal institutions recognize that this is a form of discrimination that our laws can and should reach, that this isn't an interpersonal problem. It's a bigger problem regarding equality of opportunity. And in the years since then, we have seen a lot of changes in how employers proactively engage around this issue in terms of doing trainings, in terms of ensuring that there are complaint mechanisms available for victims of harassment and thinking through how to make that process work. Again, a ton of terrible stories out there. Bad things do happen, and there's a lot more work to be done, but it's important to acknowledge that that the culture can and has made real steps forward on this issue, and it's progress we can continue.
Mm. Tony, thanks for the call. Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there? Okay, Tom, call back in case you left us momentarily. Cindy in Fox Cities. Hi.
Hello. I don't know if she's familiar, but in the state of Wisconsin, our legislator is going to, they're initiating laws right now to roll back discrimination cases for, I suppose, both men, but mostly women, and make it much harder for you to retain an attorney, and then you have to pay more of the fees, so they're making it much more difficult for that in this state. And I'm afraid that if Gorsuch gets appointed to the Supreme Court, that will become a national issue, and I think the GOP wants to take us back to the 1800s.
Emily.
Yeah, the National Women's Law Center shares the concerns about Judge Gorsuch. We are extremely concerned that his record demonstrates that he elevates the interests of the powerful, including employers, over the interests of individuals who depend on the protection of the laws, and in particular in discrimination and harassment cases. There are a lot of troubling opinions that he has written or joined, including a sexual harassment case where he found that a woman had taken an unreasonably long time to complain of the harassment when she complained 2 months after the first harassing comment by her supervisor. I don't think 2 months is a long time at all. It's certainly not a long time when you consider that a single harassing comment isn't against the law in general, that it takes a pattern of these sorts of statements to equal harassment. So there is reason to be concerned about potential rollbacks of workplace rights, including rights to be free from harassment and discrimination. I'm also very concerned that last week President Trump signed a law that revokes an Obama-era executive order which required federal agencies to look at the labor and employment records of companies before awarding them federal contracts, and meant that if you as a company have a lot of cases of discrimination or wage and hour violations that have gone against you, maybe you don't get that federal contract. That is no longer the law. President Trump said, no, that's not fair to companies, and I certainly am concerned that that may be only the first of many anti-worker efforts under this administration, though I certainly hope that is not the case.
Hmm. I wonder if this is expecting too much, or if you can even remember a case where this has happened. It is striking that what you have are very, very rich men who are able to settle suits here, both Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. I mean, to pay five women over the course of not that many years $13 million is really a phenomenal amount of money, isn't it, in terms of Trump University, the president paying 25 or whatever it was, million dollars. Is there a point, do you think, and has it happened, where one of these people would all of a sudden sit back and say, do some self-examination and realize, you know, I have to take responsibility for who I am, and I've made a whole lot of money, and I've been a prominent American, and I realize I've done some things that were very wrong, and I want to have a press conference and say what I've done that's wrong? You would think that that would at least bring the issue front and center, and somebody would take responsibility instead of just paying people off. Does that ever happen? People take responsibility?
Well, I'm not thinking of an example of someone who stood up and said, I messed up here and I'm going to lead a real effort to make a change. I mean, people occasionally, when they're caught on tape, sometimes they don't apologize. Sometimes right. They say, oh, that was a mistake. I regret what I said. But the sort of broader taking of responsibility for a problem, I think, yeah, that is really unusual, even when you're not talking about an individual and you're talking about a company that settles some large multi-party harassment suit, like, for example, Sterling Jewelers is the subject of a class action alleging really disturbing things about the workplace culture and the expectation that women working in the jewelry stores would basically be available for sex by hires up in the company. Even when those sorts of big cases are resolved, they tend to be resolved without any admission of liability by the company involved. Now, I guess maybe a counterexample is that Uber has certainly tried to say, in the wake of the harassment and discrimination claims made against it in recent weeks, that they are taking it really seriously, that they want to institute a culture that that addresses these problems. And, you know, it's early days, so I guess the proof will be in the pudding. That is an example of a company trying to respond to these problems by saying, all right, we're going to fix it, rather than this is all baseless and unfounded.
Mm-hmm. So. Cindy, thanks for your call. Jackie in Cross Plains. Hi.
Hi. Hello, Kathleen. Great topic. I wanted to share, I was in the early 80s. I was a young sales rep, one of six women in a sales force of 140 sales reps selling power tools. It was a very macho environment. And whenever the women did well and were called out at meetings for successes, there would always be banter about the fact it was because we were hot or because we were sexy or we wore a short skirt or whatever. And we as women came together and we complained to management. And management sent out all sorts of memos and new policies and things because they were also dealing with a new situation where they had women in their sales teams for the first time.
Right.
But it really didn't change with those memos. It changed when management started pushing back on those comments in the meetings in front of the sales force as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'd share this in case you have people in management who are listening in to talk about policies on paper, sending people memos and emails and putting stuff on the website about we don't tolerate this is an important part of change in the culture. But at Black & Decker, things really started to change when the national sales manager stood up and said, hang on a minute, I have worked out with Jackie or Kathy or Susan or Nicole, and I've seen what they did, and, you know, all of that stuff that said, give these women their due. They're probably just working harder than you guys. And, of course, the truth was we were, because we were being asked things that men were never asked, just to test us because we were girls. And, I mean, there's a whole other side to our relationships with our clients that was different than the men had to go through because we were female. But I just wanted to share that thought.
And, Jackie, what was it that made management push back so vocally finally? What pushed them to do that?
Well, when two of us became two of the top 10 salespeople and started to point out the fact that if we weren't happy and treated with respect in the company, we were clearly talented, capable people, and we could take our services elsewhere.
Right.
We just wanted, you know, and we had district managers and regional managers who worked with us every day and saw what we did and saw what we dealt with and were able to advocate with us and for us, so that management started to realize that we could lose these talented people because we're not making sure that they get the respect that they deserve.
Right. Gotcha. Emily.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great points there. One is, again, confirming that leadership makes such a difference. It's one thing to have the policy and the handbook. It's another thing to have the CEO or the head of the department really making this a priority, speaking to it, and making clear to everybody at every layer of the company that we're serious about this. This is something that we're going to stand behind. And in some ways, what that is a really powerful form of bystander intervention, intervention by the bystanders who actually have power, to say, I see what's happening here, and that's unacceptable. And that can make a tremendous difference. And I think the point about the company's financial interests is also really critical, and part of solving this problem is helping employers understand that if your workforce is so hostile to women that they cannot succeed there and that they feel that they have to leave, then you are depriving yourselves of the talents of half the workforce for no reason. And that is not going to be good for your bottom line, ultimately, if you have created these arbitrary barriers to success for half the workforce.
Thank you, Jackie, so much for your interesting call. Marcus in Green Bay, hi.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Everyone knows who Bill O'Reilly is. He's big, big news, big, big news. So along comes the newspaper reports about him paying off these women. So that's even bigger news. It almost overshadows him. And then along comes all these multi-million dollar companies, huge corporations that drop the advertisement. Now that's gigantic news. So we got that going on. Now we got something to watch on the news. That's great. My dilemma is, why on earth would the President of the United States who likes his tweeting. Why on earth? He has no idea. I mean, he might know Bill O'Reilly. That's great. They might be fishing buddies. He has no idea what goes on behind closed doors. He has no business tweeting about it. That's my dilemma. Why on earth would Trump comment on this? That's just too bizarre. So that's bigger news. So we go, you know, all the way up the ladder, and here comes Trump, you know, so overshadowing. Okay, that's my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Marcus, for the call. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what prompted. He was doing an interview with the New York Times on a number of different issues, and he was asked about this. And he had six people, advisors, in the room with him. From what I've read, this is several of them were not very happy that he spoke about this. But he just plunged right in, didn't he? He just gave an answer.
Yeah, it's difficult to figure out what he was thinking. I do think, again, it was disgraceful for the President of the United States to weigh in with a vote of confidence in this particular issue where, at best, he knows nothing. And worse, the message he's giving is he doesn't care whether Bill O'Reilly harassed these women or not, that it doesn't change his opinion of him. And that is a really terrible message to be sending to people who are dealing with these situations at work every day.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about sexual harassment this hour. Our conversation this hour prompted by the Bill O'Reilly story this week. That story prompted by a very long expose by the New York Times on Sunday that looked at Bill O'Reilly and his paying out of $13 million to five different women who had made accusations of sexual harassment or other inappropriate behavior. And there are tapes, there are documents, there's a lot of information here. So as a result of all of that, a number of advertisers have said, I don't know how many have pulled out of Fox altogether. I know 52 have pulled out of O'Reilly's show, which, you know, would have a network concern. Loss of advertising. He hasn't lost all of his advertising, but he's the star at Fox. He has a huge number of followers. And I'm sure that they're scrambling this week to figure out how to handle yet another situation after the departure of Roger Ailes last summer under similar circumstances. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. Guest is Emily Martin, General Counsel, Vice President for Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. This is the Ideas Network. All right, back to phone calls. Gail in Fish Creek is next. Hi, Gail.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's so great, and it's so annoying that we still have to fight about all this. It really is. But back when I was in the corporate world, major corporation, we had one gentleman that not only was condescending to women, but he was also very manipulating to with people's careers and playing favorites, and he was very abusive and a really obnoxious person. And no matter who you complained to, it didn't go anywhere individually. So the company ended up having a survey taken where it was like peer review. So all the managers were pulling together, and they would give evaluation on every individual that was working in the company. And then it all of a sudden came about that all of the people, the employees, could then also rate their performance of the managers. So we all had an opportunity to rally together. We all took an oath, and there were men involved in this and a lot of coworkers, and we did it very professionally. We put it all in the report, in the review, which would then have to go to him, and there would be no names on any of the information, but all the complaints would be there in a professional way. And he was going to have to take that to his boss and be reviewed about what he was going to do about all of the things that he was being reviewed about. And when he got that report, it got very quiet in his office. He did not talk to anyone, and he never went to his boss with the review because we never got the feedback meeting we were supposed to get on what he was going to do to take care of the discrepancies and discuss them with us. And all of the harassment started to stop.
Interesting.
It was the power of a group. And
right.
We all kind of like took an oath. This is our opportunity. It came along. If we say nothing now, we have to sit and live with this.
Emily, your response.
Yeah, so again, there is a power in groups, sort of informal workplace organizing, banding together with others who are experiencing this harassment can be very powerful and strengthen the hand that any one individual holds. It's also the other thing I heard in that story, which was really interesting, is the power of accountability measures that are built in where mid-level managers, lower-level supervisors are being held accountable when their own performance is rated for how they address and deal with harassment. And that's one of the things that can be done in corporations that's really successful and promising, is not just, again, having the policy on paper, but making clear to everybody who has supervisory responsibilities. One of the things that we're going to look at when we rate your performance is whether there's harassment happening in the area you oversee, and if so, what did you do to respond? How did you address that? So I think both of those pieces together are really important here.
Thanks so much for the call, Gail. Anne in Madison, hi.
Hi, I just wonder if the guest has any thoughts or reflections or predictions on whether some of this, we can leave some of this, particularly male harassment, to the generation of Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly, and expect our younger men in particular to be over this. You know what I'm saying? It's like, is it isolated to that generation?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like a throwback to, 50 years ago or more, the Donald Trump statements, the allegations against Bill O'Reilly, Roger Ailes, and others, that I do think that on average, overall, we are making progress as we move forward in the generations. But, millennial men's attitudes about women in the workplace are generally, when they're measured, more positive, and that's part of the long-term culture change. That being said, it is never the case that all members of a generation are good or bad. And so, I work at the National Women's Law Center, and we believe that policy is really important in helping drive and ensure these bigger culture changes. So while hopefully these problems in some ways start to take care of themselves, it is also critical that agencies have the funding and the tools to enforce sexual harassment laws, that the courts have judges on them that understand what anti-discrimination laws are about and why they're important, and that are willing to stand up for the rights of individuals over the interests of corporations, and that our laws really hold employers accountable for ensuring that harassment doesn't happen on their watch. So all of those pieces, I think, are also part of what we need to continue to move forward as a country and get over this really, really still disturbing thing that's happening in too many workplaces across the country.
Short on time, a complicated question, but I know you'll have a response to it. Samantha writes, I don't understand why so many women supported Donald Trump. The statistics for sexual abuse before the age of 18 is 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys. Those are conservative figures. The vast majority of the offenders are men. What happens to the thinking of those victims that they disconnect their experience with male offenders from support for someone who clearly engages in sexual harassment?
Yeah, I can't really explain that either. I think that a lot of women thought to themselves, I don't know, but I guess a lot of women thought to themselves, yes, he made those comments, but we really care about this thing he says he's going to do to bring jobs back, and that's the most important thing. So what I hope is that more people understand that his attitudes toward women are really related to women's financial security, to families' financial security, and that these two pieces are not separate things.
Mm-hmm. Emily, thank you very much for being with us. It was a very interesting hour and an important one, I think, too. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mm-hmm. Our pleasure. Emily Martin is General Counsel and Vice President for Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. She looks is in charge of their advocacy, policy, and education efforts to ensure fair treatment and equal opportunity for women at work and to achieve workplace standards that allow all women to achieve and succeed. Thanks so much to Chris Molina for producing this hour and Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in Milwaukee. We're with you again on Monday, where we'll have an extremely active, when have we not, all things political. And we're also going to be celebrating Poetry Month. We'll have some great poets with us and ask you to look over your favorite poetry and maybe read a poem for us on Monday. So we'll celebrate poetry and talk politics, 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock on Monday. Have a good weekend. Thank you very much for listening and for your contributions.